I invite you this morning to take a few moments for the opening prayer. If you will imagine being there in the auditorium and me walking over to stage right, lighting the candle that is there, and seeing that flame, that spark of spirit that is in each and every one of us, it is a reminder that we have that presence within us at all times. And now, if you'll join me for the opening prayer. I know that that power, that presence, that loving spirit is in me, as me, flowing through me. I know that that presence, as spirit, fills me, fills my whole body with the energy of love, with that energy of compassion, with that energy of respect. And as I acknowledge the presence of those things within me, I also acknowledge the presence of those things as they flow from me to each and every one that I know and to those that I do not know. That love, that compassion, that respect, each and every one of us deserve that. Each and every one of us should accept that. And so I know, with the power of that presence, again, in me, as me, flowing through me, opens up not only myself to the greater glory of this world, but to the greater glory of that spirit, that source of all good things. And as I let that flow from me out into the world, I know that I bless each and every one that I know, those that I have not met yet, and the rest of the world combined. Now let's take a minute or two and meditate upon that. See that power, that presence, that kindness within us, that respect within us for all things.
So this month we're looking at a new theme. It's mindfulness for mavericks. Mindfulness for mavericks. And a maverick is defined as someone who kind of blazes their own path, doesn't necessarily follow the herd. And we'll talk about that more next week and in the weeks to come, but that's kind of the idea of it. And I'm going to bet that somebody here, if you'll put your hand up and be brave, identifies themselves as the maverick. Yes? Anybody besides? Okay, yeah. I think by definition that we're in religious science, we're mavericks, period, because we're not following the conventional normal path. So welcome. Today's topic then is just breathe. Just breathe. And I want to say this series was created almost a year ago. The whole year-long series was created last summer from a group of ministers and practitioners and lay people, leaders with Centers for Spiritual Living. And I'm amazed at how kind of relevant it is each month as we go along to what's happening in the world, even though it was created, like I said, months and months ago. So I want to start off with a quote from the Buddha. And the Buddha says, praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and sorrow, come and go like the wind. To be happy, rest like a great tree in the midst of them all. Be a great tree in the midst of them all. So mindful breathing shifts us from being swept up in the events of our day, of the everyday events, and reminds us that we are spiritual beings. It takes us back to that place where we remember that we are spiritual beings having spiritual experiences in human form. That is the core. That is the essence of who we are. Mindful breathing isn't an escape from or an avoidance of life events. It's actually a process to return us to our powerful center and then to allow us to respond to events from that center instead of from our triggered emotions and beliefs. The third Zen patriarch of China, Seng Chan, said, "There is no need to seek the truth. Just put a stop to your opinions. Once you stop loving and hating, truth will reveal itself." Last Sunday, Brent and Amy were singing the song "Love." Watch Love Rise. And it's like when we stop doing all the stuff that's in the way, love is the natural thing and it will just rise. It will just show up. Mindfulness brings us to that place of our awareness for ourselves that will just naturally show up. So we all personalize and we all project. And by personalizing, I mean we make the mistake that what happens in the world always has something to do with me. It's all about me. An extreme example of that is a child who doesn't do their homework and reads the next day that a plane crashes and feels that because they didn't do their homework, the plane crashed. And so we do that, all of us, to a greater or lesser extent, on and off, that we are the cause of things out in the world. Projection, then, is the opposite of that. It's when we place what is happening within us on others or the world. So if I'm feeling fearful, everybody looks scary to me, even though they're not. If I'm angry, everybody's angry. And so it's when we project that. So we get caught up in this trap of personalizing and projecting. Taking a breath allows us to regain our center before we react from that consciousness. Mark Nepo, in the Book of Awakening, says humans have spilled, I love this metaphor, humans have spilled soup for millennia. And generations have made excuses saying it was the earth. The earth shifted. And others have secretly thought he meant to do it. He meant to spill that soup. If you want to save the world, then when you spill the soup, simply say, "I'm sorry, I spilled the soup." The Indian guru Ramana Maharshi says, "Wanting to reform the world without discovering one's true self is like trying to cover the world in leather to avoid the pain of walking on stones and thorns. It's much simpler to wear shoes." And so as we take that breath, we come to a perspective, we become more centered, and we can respond rather than react more effectively. And we can respond more holistically, not filtering everything through my personal viewpoint, but seeing from a larger, less personalized perspective. You know, I've recently read a term called uncentering. And as a person who spent a great deal of my life trying to get centered, you know, spiritually centered, to become uncentered was an interesting idea. And what it's used as is becoming uncentered from our own perspective, our own blinders, our own just seeing things in the way that we see things. I find that when I am in spiritual alignment, when I'm spiritually centered, I get a more holistic view, a less centered on David view. And so that's the invitation. Another thing that mindful breathing does is helps us to notice when our breathing is off. If we're paying attention to our breath, we can notice quite a bit. And that breathing is being off is an indicator that our consciousness is off. I used to be a rebirther, a licensed certified rebirther, and rebirthing is a process that uses a circular yogic breathing technique, that deepens a participant's self-awareness and starts to clear out some of the stuff that's been in the way. And when I, as a rebirther, I would notice, we were instructed to notice where the client's breath would get stuck. There'd be resistance, or there'd be a holding in the in-breath or a holding on the out-breath. And we would notice that was a reliable indicator around areas of stuckness in their life. You know, rapid, shallow breathing often occurs when we're stressed or when we're angry. And it's common to hold our breath when we're scared, when we're experiencing fear. And interestingly, some people hold their breath when they're feeling strong feelings of pleasure because they have a belief system that associates pleasure and fear. I shouldn't be experiencing this much pleasure, so I won't take it in. I won't breathe. And we may have to tell a person to breathe it all in as they're experiencing something wonderful that's happening. Breathe it in. So take a breath with me. Being mindful of our breathing is a great diagnostic tool to check out what we're really feeling. So we can, as we become mindful of our breath, use it that way. Mindful breathing has another function. We're going to go through four functions today. It has a third function, and that is to empower us. You know, in the study of martial arts, the first thing one learns from a good teacher is how to stand and how to breathe. I remember a friend of mine who started the study of Kenpo when I was living in Los Angeles, and he wanted to learn punches and kicks and throws and all that stuff. And he came back from his first session and said, all we did was learn how to stand and breathe. I already know how to stand and breathe. That's all we did. By about 4 or 5 weeks into that, he said, I now know why they teach us to stand and breathe, to learn that. Learning how to stand mindfully provides a strong external base from which we can either move out or we can deflect an attack. Learning how to breathe provides a strong internal base to do, in effect, the same thing. And what this does is to allow us to interact with the world from a position of calm, balanced, focused power. When we are not calm, when we're not focused, when we're not in balance. If you've ever seen a person go charging into something in anger and they meet a person who is calm and centered and balanced, that person can just take them and turn them and throw them on the ground. When we're not calm and focused and balanced in our lives, we respond from fear and anger and hurt, and we usually find ourselves lying on the ground after we have reacted through the circumstances of life. We've done things that we later regret or said things that we later regret, and that oftentimes can get us into significant trouble. Many of us are used to taking a deep breath when we're going to do something physically strenuous. You're going to lift something up and it's just and exert, because mindful breathing establishes us, grounds us in our power. Finally, mindful breathing is cumulative. It's cumulative. As we spend more time becoming and being spiritually centered, it lays down new track in our neural pathways. And so that state of being centered and calm becomes more frequent and more accessible and more normal for us. And so we begin to operate more frequently from that state and less from a state of being out of balance. In her book, What's in the Way is the Way. Love that title. Writer and author Mary O'Malley uses the metaphor of a meadow. And that being in this meadow, this beautiful meadow, is our natural and in truth constant state. And that in fact we are, our natural state is, we are the meadow itself. But as we grow up, as we experience life, clouds of separation and fear drift in. And so we begin to fight those clouds. We begin to get into those clouds and start fighting whatever's in there so that we can return to meadow consciousness, all the while forgetting we're already in the meadow. And as Sing-san indicated earlier, all we have to do is stop fighting. And the five qualities of this meadow are: first, flow, being open to the flow of life exactly as it is, exactly as it is. Not trying to defend against it, not trying to make it something it's not, not trying to spiritually bypass it, not trying to do anything, just being open to the flow of life exactly as it is and being mindful with that. Secondly, the second quality is spaciousness, freedom and room to be. Have you noticed that the universe is a pretty big place, a lot of space? In fact, you have a lot of space. We are all just mostly space. There's the analogy made that if you could take an atom and blow it up to the size of a baseball stadium, that the nucleus of the atom would be a grain of sand on the pitcher's mound, and the electrons would be dancing around at the outer skirts, the outer edges of the baseball stadium. And everything else in between is space. you and I are mostly space. We're all space cadets. So we can remember that spaciousness, this freedom and room to be, is our natural state. Then the third quality is light, our ability to shine out our natural radiance. Plato said, we can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark. The real tragedy of life is when adults are afraid of the light. The real tragedy is when we're afraid of the light. So light, our natural radiance, is the third quality of this meadow. The fourth quality is love. The infinite is love. Every spiritual teaching has said that God is love, some form of that. Every mystic who's ever touched that infinite presence, who's had that breakthrough we talked about last week, has experienced this deep, deep love of the universe that is beyond comprehension. That's why I when I alluded earlier to that song, Watch Love Rise, it's that song. It's allowing that which already is to just rise. And the fifth quality then of the meadow is stillness, that peace that passes understanding, that deep stillness. And life arises out of a vast stillness. Life arises out of a vast stillness. So let's spend a few moments just breathing mindfully. There's no right or wrong way. I invite you to just pay attention to your breath as it enters your nostrils, or if you're a mouth breather like I sometimes am, as it enters your mouth, and just be mindful of that breath. And we'll just take a couple of minutes to do that. In ancient Greece, there was a legend of a kingdom that was without a king. And an oracle told them that the next man, the next person who came through their gate, the gate of the kingdom, would be their next king. The next person who came through was a peasant named Gordius, riding an ox cart. And so they took and made him king. And his son took the ox cart and tied it up as a reminder of who he was into the kingdom, onto a place in the kingdom, tied it with an extremely complicated knot. And it was a knot that had within it other knots. And after the king died, and the son died, long after that, another oracle predicted that the person who could undo the Gordian knot, because it was so complicated that nobody could figure out how to undo the knot, and that the person who could figure out how to undo the knot would rule the known world. Some years later, a 17-year-old kid named Alexander walked in, saw the knot, contemplated it for a few moments, and realized that there was no rules about how to undo the knot. And so, according to legend, he pulled out his sword and cut the knot in half and thus unraveled it. Our breath is a sword. Our breath is our sword for undoing the Gordian knots that are in our life. if you've looked at the world, it seems like a Gordian knot, knots within knots within knots, and nobody has any idea how to untangle it. It reminds me of Einstein's quote that we cannot solve a problem at the level of consciousness that created the problem. And we as human beings, being unconscious, unmindful, have created global warming, terrorism, pandemics and fear and all the and anger and all that goes with that, racism, tribalism in all of its forms. And it's not that consciousness that's going to undo that. Mindful breathing is the sword that takes us to another place, another sword, another level of consciousness, if you will, another source. And that source, through us, can do the unraveling and can cut through it. And so our willingness to practice mindful breathing, to be in that place where we are connected with source no matter what. And if we get off, we simply say, I'm sorry, I spilled the soup. So we can come back to that. That is our way of moving out of, cutting through all the knotted up stuff, the bloated nothingness, as Emerson calls it, that we experience in life. And so it may seem like you're just sitting, breathing, and the mind will say, oh, this is so unimportant. There's nothing happening. There's all that stuff, that message. My friend Sharon Salazar talks about when she and some friends were opening up a meditation institute, they had a mock-up of a manual that says, don't do something, just sit there, as their motto. Don't do something, just sit there. And so as we allow ourselves to sit and to unplug from all the that's going along, all the clouds in the meadow, we begin to establish ourselves, reestablish ourselves, and remember ourselves in the meadow. And then we can support others in remembering themselves in the meadow. So this week, I invite you to practice breathing mindfully. If you find yourself getting off, just return. Don't try and analyze it. Don't blame yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Just return. But practice breathing mindfully. Just watch the breath. Pay attention to it as it comes in your nostrils or in your mouth, and as it goes out of your nostrils or your mouth. And sit with nothing else to do but that. And then secondly, take one of the five qualities of the flow, spaciousness, light, love, stillness, and contemplate one of those five qualities. Contemplate it from an awareness that it already lives within you. All you're allowing to do is expand. You don't have to make it happen. We can't make love happen, but we can let love rise. We can't make flow happen, but we can pay attention to it and be in it. So are we good for those two spiritual practices, breathing mindfully and contemplating one of those five qualities? Yes, thank you. Sharon Salzberg, who in her book, A Heart as Wide as the World, she tells a little story. This is part of the whole same chapter, but she had a friend of hers who ended up being very sick and in the hospital. And one day she came home and found a voicemail from him on her voicemail. And he said he was back and he was out of the hospital and wanted her to call him. And so she went to call him. And just as she did so, her phone rang. And it was another friend calling to say, hey, do you know about Joseph? He was in the hospital. He almost died. And she goes, yes, I just got a message from him. And I'm trying to call him. I'll call you back later. And so they hung up. And literally as they hung up, another friend called in and said, hey, did you hear about Joseph? He was in the hospital. He almost died. And this happened one more time. Three friends right in a row, bang, bang, bang. And so finally she got them all off the phone, called up her friend Joseph. And she goes, well, from here on, I guess I'm going to have to call you he who almost died. And Joseph said, well, that's a whole lot better than he who almost lived. And it's an invitation that are we almost living or are we fully living? Are we mindfully living? And she says that awareness ignites a potent and vital energy in us. In the language of the original Buddhist texts, the word tejos is used. It has several meanings: heat, flame, fire, or light, and it conveys a sense of splendor, radiance, and glory. Tejas refers to a bright energy, a strength, a power that is luminous. By practicing meditation, we bring forth some of this splendor, this luminosity and power into the activities of everyday life. We practice meditation to be aware no matter what we are doing. And the deeper our awareness, the greater our luminosity. I invite you to be lights unto the world, not by huge, great actions based on fighting with clouds, but to be in that awareness simply by breathing mindfully. I see in the chat that somebody asked me to restate the five qualities. They are flow, not the advertiser on whatever that insurance company is, but F-L-O-W, spaciousness, light, love, and stillness. So let's do, we have an affirmation here. If I can pull it up really quickly, let's get to share screen. And so join me in this affirmation. I breathe mindfully that I may intend, speak, and act, doing what is mine to do, manifesting a world that works for all. We'll say it one more time together. I breathe mindfully that I may intend, speak, and act, doing what is mine to do, manifesting a world that works for all. We have some